Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're tuned into another episode of Real College Podcast, Quarantine Edition, and I'm your host, Casey McCabe. 2020 is finally ending. Congratulations, you made it. Almost unanimously considered to be one of the worst years in modern memory, 2020 has brought us everything from the possibility of World War III to political and social upheaval and even a worldwide pandemic. To help you ring in the new year here at Real College Podcast, we would like to take a moment to look back and celebrate some of what we leave behind us as we enter this new year together. In this episode of Real College Podcast, we'll take a look back at how 2020 measures up when compared to some years from our history books, reminisce over U of M meme culture, and remember a time when we could play games together in person. You won't want to miss this. Be sure to stick around. According to just about everyone I know, 2020 has been a year for the books. But how does it stack up to years past? Here to help us understand this roller coaster of a year with a little bit of perspective is producer Emma Morris with more.
Looking back on 2020 causes us to feel many things. And most of us just want to move forward and forget that it even happened. Well, that's what Time magazine did, declaring 2020 the worst year ever on the cover of their December 14th issue. The cover has a large red X over the year, only the fifth time the publication has ever used a red X, a symbol that they reserve for some of the worst foes humanity has faced in the magazine's history. Today, we're going to look back at all of the foes which got this symbol, why they got them, and why the year 2020 chalks up to them as well. The first time we see this red X used was 75 years ago, to mark the death of Adolf Hitler, leader of the Nazi Party. Later in 1945, we saw an X on the cover again, but this time it was black and over Japan's rising sun to signify the end of the war in the Pacific Theater. The second time a red X is seen on a Time magazine cover was nearly 58 years later, in 2003. The cover had a photo of Saddam Hussein crossed out with, you guessed it, a red X. This was at the beginning of the Iraq War. The third red X can be seen just 3 years later, in 2006. This was when U.S. forces killed Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the leader of the extremist group Al-Qaeda in Iraq. The fourth and most recent X up until this point was in 2011. This was to signify the killing of Osama bin Laden, the founder and leader of Al-Qaeda. The X signified a historic end of an era, but not the end of the battle against terrorism. This brings us to the December 14th issue of Time magazine this year, which features the red X crossing out 2020. Many things happened this year. The COVID-19 pandemic, which killed nearly 1.5 million people, the death of Breonna Taylor, the death of George Floyd, murder hornets, the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and the move to everything online are just some of the things that have happened. This year pushed us to our limits, giving us feelings of helplessness, perhaps due to us not having any sort of experience with some of the things that have happened this year. Similarly to the red X on the 2011 cover, the X on 2020 signifies the historic ending of a year, but not an end to the battle against racism as well as the coronavirus pandemic. Perhaps the new year will have some mercy on us, and hopefully be a bit better than this year. For Real College Podcast, I'm Emma Morris.
Due to COVID, a lot has changed about the college experience. However, one thing that seemingly never changes is the meme culture surrounding the U of M campus. For this episode of Real College Podcast, I've decided to take a look back at some of my favorite U of M memes that I've been introduced to during my time as a gopher, as well as dive deeper into one meme that brightened my 2020. Although it happened a year before my time as a gopher began, the 2018 Graduate Hotel Microwave Incident is perhaps what began my interest in the U of M's rich meme culture. Here is an old clip from reporter Tosin Fasimo breaking down the incident.
This occurred in January 2018, when a man barricaded himself in the Graduate Hotel for 2 days in a rumored hostage situation. Classes weren't canceled, and little information was given about the situation, aside from a mysterious video in which a microwave was thrown out of a window. This incident is well known amongst UMN students, as the video was used to create a variety of memes online.
Part of what made this particular meme so memorable was, of course, the attention it was given by mainstream media.
Law enforcement ended a 38-hour standoff this afternoon at a hotel on the campus of the University of Minnesota. At the Graduate Hotel, Mark's here now in the studio to explain what happened today. Mark, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Following the famed microwave debacle, most gophers remember last year's famed rabid bat safe you alert.
Do you remember receiving the rabid bat notification?
Yes. Yeah. So I do remember that. Right, yeah. In the mall, I think it occurred.
In addition to the rabid bat, last year also brought us the case of the tween scooter robbers, which also received mainstream coverage.
University of Minnesota officials have a warning about robbery suspects using electric scooters. Two different robberies were reported on the Minneapolis campus. The first happened on the 10th Avenue Bridge around 7:30 last night. A short time later, the second was reported outside the Regis Center for Art.
Although in years past, the campus meme community supplemented my social experience and gave me things to discuss with my fellow students, this year it has meant a lot more. One meme that gave me a good laugh in 2020 was the Coalition of Zach's email that was shared on both the UMN subreddit and on Barstool Gopher's Instagram page. Now here to explain the meme is the man behind it all, Zach Faith.
Alright, so I'm Zach Faith, I'm a junior this year. I'm from Foley, Minnesota. I'm the vice president of recruitment for Farmhouse Fraternity, and I am the president of the Zachs. Me and the vice Zach Eater are actually fraternity brothers, and we're pretty good friends. So like, we've always kind of joked about, you know, making an intramural team with all Zachs and trying to figure out how we could do that. And so like, I kind of took that and then I spun it a little bit bigger and use the university directory to find all of the Zachs that go to the University of Minnesota and like individually picked out the ones to make sure like, you know, the spelling and stuff was right, and then formed like a Google group contact thing so that I could email all of them. And then I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks ago now, I sent out the mass email that like kind of went like a little bit viral, and it wasn't like a big plan. It was a little bit spontaneous.
Zach went on to explain how his lighthearted attempt at humor during the pandemic was received by the powers that be here at the university.
The thing with it is, like, it actually violated university guidelines by doing that, which I didn't realize it was a thing. Like, the university wasn't mad about it. They're just like, hey, you can't, you know, it's like technically an abuse of like the directory system to do that. And like, I didn't realize that, but they were like, you know, they weren't mean about it. They just told me like, I kind of had to stop sending the big mass emails, and so, you know, it was pretty understandable.
Although his stunt did land him in a bit of hot water, Zach notes that they have received a lot of support and interest.
So, like, right away, I think the first day we got, like, over 200 responses from Zach's about, like, random stuff, signing up for, like, or wanting to be put in some of the positions. Like, I was getting contacted by Zach's that go to, like, different universities and stuff from around the United States. It was pretty crazy the first day. It's been a lot harder now just with like classes and stuff picking up and, you know, trying to stay balanced with everything. And then definitely like slowed down a lot now. We're trying to reach out and get contact. I've tried to work along with Zach Sobiech Foundation and try and have them help with some of the like bigger stuff and everything we're trying to put together.
Although it started off as a joke, Zach intends for the group to go beyond a social group and provide service to the community.
So I'd like to kind of get us organized so that we can start holding events once quarantine and everything is over and it's safe to be gathering in large groups. And so I'd like for us to be able to kind of fundraise and things. Like, what I kind of want the group to be is a way to organize money to pay for children that need cancer treatments. And so we've already kind of raised some money for that through like our t-shirt sales, which closed like last week. And so trying to come up with more events that can hopefully, you know, raise a lot of money so that families that are in need kind of have that payment.
Although it may sound silly, to some, a room full of Zachs is not a bad place to be.
I mean, it's been really liked, and it's such a easy thing that you have in common with somebody, and like, with a lot of the guys, we, you know, like, you talk with them and it feels like you've been friends with them, because, like, there's no, like, you've already kind of broken the social barrier by reaching out about, like, you know, the stupid, like, you know, we're all named Zach and stuff. It, like, there's no, like, kind of social kind of stigma, and so it was pretty easy to, like, reach out, just, like, actually having, like, personal conversations with people. Like, one of the guys I called last week, and me and one of the Zachs are getting lunch or dinner with him tomorrow night is our plan, and it's pretty easy to, you know, find somebody else that has the same name, and, like, I think doing it in, like, the large kind of quantity that I did, like, allowed for it to kind of be a bit of a meme for the university, and so, like, when I contact people, they kind of laugh about it.
Thank you, Zach, for making me laugh this year. I, like many, appreciate it, and look forward to what you and your fellow Zachs accomplish in 2021. Reporting for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe. In 1974, the game Dungeons & Dragons was created by Ernest Gygax and David Arneson. Credited as being the first true role-playing game, D&D has defined the RPG industry and has also found popularity across generations. In this installment from the Real College Podcast Vault, we will hear from reporter Melody Lewis as she takes us on a trip down memory lane to a time when we could roll the dice together.
You know, like I said, I have a ton of dice. So, like, I can pull out here. Like, you can see this is, you know, this is a six-sided dice. It's got a little chipmunk on it. I don't know why. I think I took it from a game. This is, I think it's a D24. It's a 24-sided die, which is not standard for the game, but I have one. You know, there's a novelty to having random sorts of dice with different shapes. I had this beautiful set of, like, silver-coated, I mean, they were plastic, but they were painted like silver, the set of two six-sided dice. And when I would run games, I would often, like, try to pull them out for, like, the really big, serious things. Like, oh, this is the boss monster, you know, he's rolling the six-sided dice. These are the lucky dice coming out for this one.
Dungeons & Dragons is largely a role-playing game with a lot of moving parts. There's books, there's dice, and in Ben's case, a toolbox packed full of miniatures. This is a Stanley Click and Connect toolbox. Like, I'm talking about a, like, tool shed toolbox.
All right, first of all, I'd like to say I'm not paid by Stanley. This is not an advocacy for any of their products. You are free to buy whatever you want. But I use this toolbox to contain...
We are not sponsored.
This is not sponsored, although if you'd like to sponsor us, please. So anyway, this is a toolbox filled with all of the miniatures that I use. This isn't true for everybody, but for some people, part of the fun of Dungeons & Dragons is having miniatures to represent the characters and the monsters. And for me, I love having... I Dungeon Master a lot, so I love having a ton of different kinds of monsters. I don't know if the troll can talk too much, but this is like a big two-headed troll, and I've got like some sort of like rock troll. I don't know. They're massive. Like if you were to imagine how big this creature is, it's like it you know, imagine a person and then imagine you like something standing up to your knee. Like that's how big this thing is compared to like an average person. And you get that sense of scale whenever, you know, people have their little miniatures that are maybe about an inch or two tall representing their character. And then, you know, I throw down the 6-inch tall troll figure or the dragon comes down and it's like, you know, almost a foot in wingspan. And you know, it gets you a nice sense of scale of, you know, this isn't just it's not just in your head. You get to physically see, wow, this thing is really big. You know, it could probably eat me if it wanted to. I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons for about 14, 15 years. I started around the 3rd edition. We're currently on the 5th, so I've been playing throughout that time. I've also gone back and played previous editions. Throughout that time, I've been played various roles. I've been an individual player. I've played the referee Dungeon Master role. In my time, I've collected maybe about 50 books across different editions, as well as numerous other miniatures, dice, and other sorts of paraphernalia and components that are used as part of the game. So I've been pretty involved in the whole experience for quite a while now.
When you say you've been playing since first edition, exactly how many years is that?
So I mean, I wasn't around for the release of first edition, which was back in, was it late 70s, early 80s? But of course, you know, this is a game that exists in paper and pencil, so you can go back and play any version of it you want, if you want to. So I've gone back and I've tried those versions. I've played with other people. Every version and edition has sort of its own nuances and appeals, and every one of them sort of has sort of a little dedicated community. But the latest edition, the fifth edition, has been the most popular by far from every statistic I've seen, every sales metric I've seen, and certainly from the communities that I've engaged with.
In the 1980s, religious figures called D&D demonic, an introduction to the occult. Now D&D has a larger, more diverse player base than ever before. It's even a core theme to the hit Netflix series Stranger Things.
The Demogorgon!
We're deep shit.
Will, your action!
I don't know!
Fireball him!
I have to roll a 13 or higher!
Too risky, cast a protection
spell. Don't be a pussy! Fireball him!
Cast protection!
The Demogorgon is tired of your silly human bickering! It stops towards you!
So I would attribute it to, I guess I would say, sort of this surge in, I guess, the acceptance of, I guess I would say, geek culture. I mean, I'm sure everyone's seen Marvel movies and, you know, Star Wars is, I mean, Star Wars has always been kind of a thing, but there's more new Star Wars movies and all these other sorts of things. Video games are more popular, and a lot of these things have always kind of drawn on Dungeons and Dragons in some sort of way. It's sort of the archetypal fantasy work. So whenever people think about, well, fantasy or like swords and wizards and stuff, you know, I mean, they'll think of Lord of the Rings, and usually they'll think of Dungeons and Dragons next. So all of those other things growing has sort of brought people back to look at sort of what's the source, what's the original sort of thing. And I think that's brought a lot of people into the hobby.
Speaking of the source, I made a visit to the Source Comics and Games in Roseville, Minnesota. That's where Ben says I can find most D&D materials and playing campaigns with locals.
I definitely feel like there's a lot more acceptance for playing, and there's a lot of different media aside from, like, not only Stranger Things, but things like Critical Role and how that Kickstarter, like, broke so many records that's made it more of an acceptable thing. There's also, like, places like our store here at The Source, since we have this large community where you can meet others, then it makes things like word of mouth more possible than what it used to be. And we do a lot of really cool things here, and we don't only sell like media and merchandise for D&D. A lot of our staff, including myself, as well as like Hannah, Becca, and a bunch of others are also really big on playing it. One way that, as of late, like a recent example of how we encourage people to play more D&D is we used to have a statue, or what's it called when it's just the head of something?
A bust.
A bust, yeah. We had a bust of a ancient black dragon along with the Illithid or Mind Flayer on the wall. And we had a guy come in. He's like, I really don't want to buy this. You know, me and my wife have been saving up, but I don't feel like I've earned it. And I approached him. I said, hey, man, if you buy this bust, I will, after the store closes on a Sunday, I had him come through and run a one-shot with him and some friends that were new to D&D, where at the end they killed an adult black dragon. And then I presented him with the ancient dragon head bust. And it wasn't for anything promotional. We weren't being paid off the clock to do it. We just genuinely enjoy playing D&D here. And we, any opportunity we see that we can spread it, we're always just like, yeah, you should do more of that.
I want to tell a story, but I don't want to know how it ends. There's a game out there that you can find that you can play. There's a book that you can open. It'll tell you how to roll some dice. It'll tell you, you know, what do you need to write down on a piece of paper, and you can tell whatever story you want.
That's all for this episode of Real College Podcast. Happy New Year. We look forward to bringing you more quality content in 2021. As always, stay safe, Minnesota. We hope you stay happy, healthy, and connected. Until next time, signing off for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe.